So friends, welcome once again to chapter 4 of our discussion about the GST framework in our country. So far, we have covered in chapter 1, introduction to GST. In chapter 2, we have covered all the four acts, IGST, CGST, SGST, and UTGST. In chapter 3, we have covered levying of the GST and procedure for the same. In chapter 4 now, friends, we are going to discuss another very important aspect of the GST framework, and that is assessment and returns. Assessment apparently is very, very important. And why is that so? That is because the entire GST framework is based on the premise that the taxpayer is going to be fully compliant with all the provisions of the law. And thereby, the GST framework poses tremendous amount of faith and trust on the taxpayers, on the registered persons under the GST. Whether the taxpayer is really doing so or he is violating, to establish that, it becomes necessary that certain mechanism be prescribed and followed, and that mechanism is through the process of assessment. And that is what is the focus of our discussion in this chapter 4. Assessment, what does the assessment means? Assessment is determination of tax liability under the GST. As we all know, the GST framework has the arrangement where everything is online. The registration is online. Filing of the returns is online. Payment of the tax is also online. And whether everything is going as per the design or not, whether the taxpayer or the registered persons are doing the necessary compliance or not, for that, assessment has to be done. So the assessment is determination of tax liability under the GST. Assessment ensures correct tax collection and statutory compliance. So through the process of assessment, tax collection and statutory compliance is ensured. Mostly under the GST framework, as we have discussed, it is based on the self-assessment by the registered taxpayer. Tax authorities may intervene where discrepancies may arise. Returns are periodic statements of sales, purchase and tax details. So what are the returns that we have been talking about, which are filed by the registered persons from time to time? These returns are nothing but periodic statements of sales, purchase and the tax details that the registered person will submit online on the GST portal. Filing these returns enables ITC matching and system transparency. It is technology-driven return filing form basis for audit and scrutiny. So this system that the GST framework has, which is totally technology-driven. So this return filing, it forms the basis for the audit and scrutiny wherever the department may feel necessary. So primarily, friends, the assessments can be grouped into two classes. Number one, assessment by the taxpayer, and that is referred as self-assessment. Then assessment by the tax authorities. So under the assessment by the tax authorities, you have four situations. Number one is provisional assessment. Number two is summary assessment. Number three is scrutiny of returns. And number four is best judgment assessment. And this best judgment assessment is applicable in case of non-filers and in case of unregistered persons. So who are the non-filers? Non-filers are the taxpayers who have registered under the GST law, but they have not been filing the returns. So they are treated as non-filers. So in case of non-filers, since they are not filing any detail or they are not filing any return on the GST portal, so therefore no information is available with regard to such taxpayers, and therefore the tax department or the tax authorities need to do a best judgment assessment in case of such non-filers. And the best judgment assessment is also done in case of unregistered taxpayers. So unregistered persons. So what are the unregistered persons? As we all know, that registration under the GST is mandatory only when the turnover of a business crosses a threshold, goes beyond a threshold, and that threshold, as we know, is 20 lakhs, 10 lakhs, and 40 lakhs in certain cases. So the businesses whose turnover has not crossed these threshold, apparently they are not liable to register, and therefore they are unregistered taxpayers or unregistered persons. Now, assessment of these people also needs to be done. And why it needs to be done? Because only after the assessment is done, you would be able to establish whether these unregistered persons are really need to not file the not register, or they have crossed the threshold but they are purposely not filing the returns. So this is how, friends, the assessment mechanism works as far as the GST framework is concerned. Let's understand these different types of assessments one by one. So self-assessment is carried out by the registered taxable person himself. Departmental assessments are initiated by the tax authorities, includes provisional scrutiny, best judgment, and summary assessment, as we have discussed. Each type governed by specific sections of the CGSTA, subjective to safeguard revenue and ensure voluntary compliance. So the objective of this entire thing is the objective of this assessment mechanism that we are talking about is to safeguard the revenue and ensure voluntary compliance by all the taxpayers, by all the tax persons, by all the registered persons. So let's look at self-assessment, which is under section 59. So every registered person required to self-assess his tax payable. Tax liability is calculated for each prescribed tax period, and returns are to be filed as per section 39 of the CGSTA. So self-assessment is based on the outward supplies, inward supplies, and the ITC. Timely payment and return filing is essential for the compliance, and it is most important and primary form of assessment under the GST, and that is your self-assessment. Provisional assessment is dealt by section 60 of the CGSTA. It is applicable when value or tax rate cannot be determined. So there may be a situation where either the value of the supplies and or the services or the tax rate applicable to such supplies or the services is not determinable, and therefore provisional assessment will need to be done. Taxpayer can request or may request proper officer in writing with the reasons as to why does he want the provisional assessment to be done. Officer to pass the provisional order within 90 days, and if required, he can ask the registered person to sign a bond with a surety or security before the approval. So because the department would like to ensure that the registered person does pay the required liability if it arises, and for that purpose the the officer can ask the registered person to sign a bond with a security or with a surety or security before giving the approval. Now, the officer will do the final assessment order within 6 months. Interest will be payable on additional tax arising after final order. So it is possible that the tax liability after the provisional assessment is done and the final order is given, the tax liability is going to be higher than what it was assessed as a provisional assessment. In that case, the additional tax will need to be paid. And contrary to this, refund eligible with interest if excess tax are paid. So in case as part of the subsequent to the provisional assessment, if the tax which has been paid is in excess of the final tax liability arriving on the final order, so that difference will need to be refunded to the taxpayer registered person together with the interest on the excess amount of tax collected. Scrutiny of return is dealt by Section 61. So, friends, proper officer may scrutinize returns and related particulars when he has a reason to believe that the returns which have been filed do not reflect the correct situation, correct position, and therefore they can go for scrutiny of the returns under Section 61. Verification is conducted to ensure correctness of the declared details. Discrepancies, if any, are communicated to the taxpayer for explanation after scrutiny of the returns has been done. 30 days are given to the taxpayer to furnish the satisfactory clarification. In case if the taxpayer fails to respond, it may trigger audit or demand proceedings. If explanations are given within the period of 30 days and the explanations are accepted by the officer, in that case, no further action is initiated. Let's now look at the best judgment assessment, which is as per Section 62 and Section 63. Best judgment assessment is applicable to non-filers of the returns after service of notice. So the people who are registered, but they are not filing the returns, they have been given the notice by the department for filing the returns. Despite the fact that they have been given the returns, they still have not filed the returns. In such cases, best judgment assessment can be done after serving the notice. Officer assesses liability based on the available material. Assessment order is issued within the prescribed 5-year limit. And that is what the officer will do as part of the best judgment assessment. If the returns are filed, the valid returns are filed within the period of 30 days by the taxpayer registered person, in that case, the order is withdrawn. So when the valid returns are filed, the order is withdrawn. Also applies to persons liable but not registered under GST. So the best judgment assessment process is also applicable to the people who are liable but not registered under GST. Opportunity of being heard mandatory before final order. So before the officer passes any order under Section 62 and 63, he will always give an opportunity of being heard to the registered person or the registered taxpayer of being heard before passing the order. Summary assessment is dealt with under Section 64 of CGSTA. Summary assessment is invoked in special cases to protect interest of the revenue. Summary assessment process will require prior permission of the additional or joint commissioner. It is applied where delay may adversely affect the government revenue. So when the officer has a reason to believe that if there is any delay done in the assessment of a particular taxpayer or registered person, this delay might adversely impact the government revenue. In such cases, the officer, with the prior permission of the additional or joint commissioner, can initiate the summary assessment. Assessment order is issued based on the available evidence. person in charge of the goods is treated as taxable person in certain cases. Order may be withdrawn if found erroneous upon review. So in case if the if it is found that the reason for which summary assessment was initiated was erroneous, in such case the summary assessment order will be withdrawn by the officer so as to make things clear. Now friends, let us understand the meaning and importance of tax invoice under GST. We all have understood based on our previous discussions that one document which is extremely important in the context of the GST, and that is the tax invoice. It is the tax invoice which becomes the evidence of the supply. It is the tax invoice based on which the supplier is able to claim credit, ITC input tax credit, or the buyer is able to claim the credit. So the tax invoice is defined as a legal document issued by a registered supplier. It is issued by a registered supplier. It is issued for taxable supply of goods or services. It contains details of value, tax charged, and the prescribed particulars under the law. It acts as a primary evidence for supply and tax liability. It is essential document for claiming input tax credit, and this tax invoice is governed by Section 31 of CGSTA. The tax invoice is for goods involving movement, invoice before at removal. So what is the time of issue of tax invoice? As we have understood that time of supply and place of supply are the two very important concepts in the framework of GST. So how to determine the time of issue of the tax invoice? Because it is the time of issue and the supply that determines the tax liability. So how to determine time of issue of a tax invoice? So number one, in case of goods involving movement, that means when the goods are moving from one place to another, invoice before or at removal is going to be the time of issue of the tax invoice. Invoice before or at removal is going to be the time of issue of the tax invoice. For the goods without movement, that means goods are not moving from one place to another, invoice at the time of delivery is going to be the time of issue of the tax invoice. For services, invoice before or after provision of the service within the prescribed time is going to be time of issue of a tax invoice. Remember, revised invoice is permitted. So it is possible that the supplier has raised the invoice and subsequently he realizes that there was an error in the invoice. So does it mean that he has to live with that invoice? And the answer is no. So the supplier has the authority to revise the invoice, subject to certain conditions. And what those conditions are? Number one, revised invoice is permitted within 1 month of the date of the issue of the invoice. Invoice not mandatory where value below prescribed limit. Bill of supply issued for exempt supplies or composition dealers. So please remember, issuance of tax invoice is not mandatory where value is below the prescribed limit. Meaning what? Meaning when the value, the turnover of the agency of the business is below the threshold where it is not liable to register, in such case he does not have to issue the invoice. What he has to issue is the bill of supply. Likewise, in case of exempt supplies or in case of composition dealers, there is no need to issue a tax invoice. What is to be done is only issuance of bill of supply. So bill of supply is to be issued for exempt supplies or the composition or by the composition dealers. Special cases under section 31, receipt voucher required on receipt of advance payment. Meaning what? Meaning it is possible that a supplier or a service provider will receive a payment in advance from the customer or from the from the customer. So in such case, he is receiving the payment in advance even before making delivery of the goods or of the service. In such case, there has to be a receipt voucher which is required on receipt of advance payment. That means the supplier will need to produce a receipt voucher on receiving the payments. Likewise, a refund voucher is issued where advance received but supply not made. So the supplier has received the payment in advance, issued the receipt voucher, but that goods, the supply of the goods or the service is not happening, and therefore this advance payment is to be refunded. So when the advance payment is being refunded, the supplier will need to prepare a refund voucher, and that will need to be issued. Invoice required under reverse charge for unregistered suppliers. For the unregistered suppliers, invoice is required under the reverse charge mechanism. Payment voucher issued at time of payment under reverse charge. Separate rules for continuous supply of goods and services are to be followed. Invoice for goods on approval before 6 months or supply date is to be followed. Let's look at what are the mandatory contents in case of a GST invoice. So we've talked about GST invoice. So you call it GST invoice or you call it tax invoice. Basically, we are referring to the same thing. So a GST invoice or a tax invoice under the GST has to have certain minimum information incorporated into the invoice document. What these mandatory contents are, let us understand them. First of all, it has to have supplier's name, his address, his GSTIN number clearly mentioned. Number two, the tax invoice has to be consecutive, serially numbered, unique for financial year. It has to have date of issue and recipient's details also included. A HSN code or accounting code of services specified also need to be given in case of the goods or in case of the services. So in case of the goods, it has to be HSN code. In case of services, it has to be the accounting code of services, which has to be specified in the invoice. Further, the tax invoice will also give taxable value, a rate of tax, and the amount of tax shown separately. So let's say, for example, this is an invoice for intra supply. So in case of intra supply, what is going to be applicable? CGST is going to be applicable and SGST is also going to be applicable. So in such case, the invoice will clearly bring out the taxable amount, which is total, rate of tax, and the tax amount separately as per the CGST and as per the SGST. It also has to mention the place of supply required in case of interstate transactions. Reverse charge applicability to be included, indicated. So in case if the GST is to be paid based on the reverse charge mechanism, that fact also has to be mentioned in the invoice. The invoice got to have the signature or the digital signature of the authorized person, which is absolutely mandatory. Now, friends, we talk about certain types of vouchers that we spoke a little while ago in the context of if a supplier is receiving advance payment, then there has to be a receipt voucher. In case if he is refunding the money, then there has to be a refund voucher. So receipt voucher is issued on receipt of advance for the supply. And this receipt voucher must include amount of advance and the applicable tax rate. So it's not that the receipt voucher will only have the amount received as advance. No, it will include the amount of advance and it will also include the applicable tax rate. The refund voucher is issued when advance returned without supply, as that we have discussed a little while ago. The refund voucher must have reference of original receipt voucher, because they need to be connected. So first you have a receipt voucher, then you have a refund voucher. So when you have a refund voucher, the refund voucher should give the reference of the receipt voucher. Payment voucher issued in reverse charge situation. All vouchers require prescribed particulars and authentication, as we have discussed in our previous discussions. In the context of the GST, friends, there are two more documents which are equally important, and that is the credit note and the debit note. So it is not that you only have the GST invoice or the tax invoice. It is not that you only have the payment voucher, receipt voucher, and the refund voucher or the payment voucher. You also have the credit note and the debit note. So the credit note and the debit note are dealt by Section 34 of the CGSTA. Let us understand them one by one as to what is a credit note, what is a debit note, when is a credit note is issued, when is a debit note is issued, why a credit note is issued, why a debit note is issued, and what kind of details these two notes must incorporate. So credit note is issued when taxable value or tax exceeds actual liability. So credit note is issued when taxable value or tax exceed actual liability. Also issued for goods returned on deficiency in supply. So that means what? That means in case when the supplier has issued the invoice and he has overstated the amount of the value, the taxable value, and overstated the amount of the tax liability. In that case, credit note will need to be issued by the supplier to the recipient so as to adjust the amount to a correct label. It is also issued for goods returned or deficiency in supply. So in case if the recipient has returned the goods, the supplier will need to issue a credit note to the recipient so as to again adjust the amount of the taxable value and the tax liability, giving effect to the goods which have been returned for whatever reason, must be declared in return within the prescribed time limit. So these credit note which are issued got to be declared in the return which are filed by the supplier within the prescribed time limit. Otherwise, they lose relevance and become irrelevant. Debit note is issued when taxable value or tax originally undercharged. So if credit note is issued when the taxable value or tax originally is overcharged, a debit note is issued when it is undercharged. So the supplier has supplied the material, and now what he has done is the goods that he has supplied are worth 1,20,000. The invoice that he has raised is for 1 lakh only. So therefore, he has shown the taxable value less by 20,000. Correspondingly, he also has shown the tax liability understated. So in that case, the supplier will issue a debit note so as to adjust the amount to 1,20,000 as far as the taxable value is concerned, and also as far as the tax liabilities are concerned. Tax liability is adjusted based on the credit or debit note. Reduction not permitted if tax incidence is already passed on. So the issuance of credit note and the debit note are dealt in Section 34 of CGSTA. Issued after original tax invoice already raised, as I have explained to you already. These are used to correct the taxable value or tax charged. The debit note and the credit note helps in proper adjustment of output tax liability, I'm sure you can very easily imagine, must be properly reported in the GST return. So any credit note or the debit note, if it is issued, it also got to be incorporated into the GST returns so as to have the effect on the GST portal. And that means also for the recipient also to have the same effect. These credit notes and the debit notes, friends, ensure accuracy and transparency in the tax computation. Let us understand the meaning of credit note. Having understood, credit note, document issued by supplier to reduce the invoice value, issued when taxable value originally overstated. Applicable where tax charged exceeds the actual liability. And that is where credit note comes in the picture. Also issued for goods returned by the recipient, issued in case of deficiency in goods or services, it acts as an evidence of reduction in the sales value. And that is what is your credit note. What are the situations for issuing the credit note? Number one, excess taxable value mentioned in the original invoice. Number two, excess tax charged compared to actual payable amount. And number three, return for goods wholly or partially by the recipients. So these are the situations, friends, where the credit notes are issued. Some more situations where the credit notes are issued: supply found defective, damaged or deficient. As a result of that, it is returned by the recipient. Post supply discount agreed as per contractual terms will also require issuance of credit note. Any genuine reduction in consideration after supply will also require issuance of a credit note. So what are the time limit for reporting of a credit note? Friends, remember, as we discussed little while ago, it is necessary that issuance of the credit note is duly reported in the returns by the supplier within the prescribed time. If that does not happen, then these credit notes lose their significance and relevance. So what these time limits are? Details to be declared in return for month of issue. The details of the credit note got to be given in the return for the month in which the credit note has been issued. Must be reported before September following the financial year. Alternatively, before filing annual return, whichever is earlier, that means before September of the following year or filing of the return, whichever is earlier, it has to be reported before that. Output tax liability adjusted accordingly. No reduction permitted if tax burden has already been passed to another person, because now the adjustment is not possible because the tax burden has already been passed on to someone. Proper disclosure mandatory for valid tax adjustment. Having understood what is a credit note, now let us look at what is a debit note. So debit note, friends, is a document issued by a supplier to increase the invoice value. Remember, credit note was issued by supplier to decrease the invoice value. The debit note is issued by the supplier for increasing the invoice value. Debit note is issued when taxable value originally understated. So the taxable value was 120,000. Invoice was 20,000. Invoice issued when the taxable value originally understated. So the invoice has been issued for 80,000. It should have been for 100,000. And therefore, the original invoice is understated. And therefore, the debit note will be issued for 20,000 and plus the incremental GST as applicable will also be forming part of the debit note. Debit note is also applicable where tax charged was less than payable. It is used to recover additional amount from the recipient. It creates additional tax liability on supplier. Must comply with the prescribed format and particulars, same as in case of the credit note. Situations where the debit note is issued. Number one, understatement of taxable value in the original invoice, short charging of tax due to calculation error, additional quantity supplied after invoice is issued, and that is where you will need to issue a debit note so as to create more liability on the recipient, increase in agreed price after supply. So after the supply has been done, the price has been increased. So for the increased price, the debit note will need to be issued. Correction of rate related mistakes, any upward revision of consideration amount will also require issuance of a debit note. Now, what are the rules that need to be followed for the reporting and tax adjustment of the debit note? Number one, it has to be declared in the return for the month of issue. Additional tax liability adjusted in same period. No specific outer time limit for issuing debit note. Unlike the credit note, there is no specific outer time limit for issuing debit note. Increases output tax payable by the supplier. Recipient eligible to claim ITC subject to conditions. Proper linkage with the original invoice is very much necessary for the purpose of reporting and for the purpose of taking the benefit of issuing the debit note. Let us now, friends, compare the credit note and the debit note. Having understood what is a credit note, having understood what is a debit note, let us now understand and make a comparison. Credit note reduces taxable value and the tax liability. Debit note increases taxable value and the tax liability. Credit note issued for excess charging situations. Debit note issued for short charging situations. Credit note may result in tax reduction. Debit note results in additional tax payable. Both notes must contain prescribed GST particulars. So it doesn't really matter whether it is a debit note or it is a credit note. Both these notes must contain the prescribed GST particulars. Must be reflected accurately in the GST return. Friends, this is a fundamental principle. Anything that you do, it has to reflect in the GST return to take effect. Otherwise, it will not take the effect. Mismatch may lead to scrutiny or tax demand. That means, in case if there are too many mismatches with regard to the debit notes and the credit notes, it might trigger a suspicion in the minds of the tax authorities, and thereby they might cause scrutiny to happen or tax demand to happen. It is essential for correct ITC reconciliation, important for audit and annual return reporting, ensures fair adjustment between the supplier and the recipients. So friends, with this we come to the end of the fourth chapter. And with this fourth chapter, what we have covered so far, we started with the introduction to GST. Then we started with the GST, IGST, SGST, CGST, and UTGST. And thereafter, we understood the process of levying of the GST and the procedure to follow. And now what we have covered in this session, friends, is the assessment and the return. Assessment and the return. Please remember, both of them are equally important. Assessments are important for the department to be confident that everything is in compliance with the law, and filing of the returns leads to good assessment. So with this, we come to the close of the fourth session. Thank you, friends. Thank you so much. Thank you.